What's going on, guys? Welcome to the latest episode of Can I Kick It? This is your host, as always, Elliot Barr. And is joining me is the fastest woman in North Carolina, Miss Brianna Pinto. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. I look forward to having you on this podcast, not only because I know your brother, Hassan, but the way how you use your platform, I was like, oh, yeah, we got to have her on the podcast.
No, I appreciate it. It's been such a whirlwind of a year, but I'm so glad for all the opportunities that have come my way and all the things that I've been able to be a part of. So I'm using my platform the best I can, and I want to keep learning along the way.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. So I do have to ask, before you got on this podcast, you had to do an agility test. How was that? Like, was it like super duper hard?
It was runs like around cones, and it's basically a test on how well you can change direction and change pace. So like, that's not something that I'm good at. And I kind of bring that to my game because as a midfielder, I like to turn off the dribble and spin defenders and like penetrate into the box. So it went well for me.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. So I want to ask you the first question, like, how did you get into soccer?
Yeah. So I come from a very athletic family. Both my parents were student athletes at UNC Chapel Hill. My dad played soccer and my mom played softball. And I grew up around a number of amazing colleges, from Carolina to Duke to NC State to Wake Forest, and we were in such a great soccer culture. So our parents would take us to the local collegiate games, and I dreamt of one day being like the next Mia Hamm, or at that time Crystal Dunn, or Tobin Heath. And I had so many different role models that I could look up to right in my own community. So when Haas, my older brother, signed up for Rainbow Soccer, which was the local rec league, I was like, well, I have to do it too. I'm going to follow in his lead. So I started playing at age 3, and I loved it ever since. Scoring is what gets me going, and I love to be a difference maker on the field. So that's how I got into it, and my whole entire family has been supportive along the way. So we've loved it.
I would have to say, like, when Hassan came to Richmond, and, you know, we talked to him and everything like that, and we looked like his family background, I was like, yo, this family is dope. Like, the whole family is, like, soccer through and through. I do have to ask, though, your brother went to Duke, so, and the rest of the family is like UNC. Do you guys give him a hard time about that?
No. We got over that hump because my mom actually went to Fuqua as well. Fuqua was Duke School of Business. Okay. That's where Haas took his fifth year, so that he could end up playing in the ACC and with Duke. He kind of followed my mom's lead in that sense. And we were really proud of him, the fact that he got to play in the ACC, and we kind of had that sibling rivalry. But I always put on a Duke shirt for the first time in my life and cheered him on. But it was such a great experience, and I was really, really proud of him.
Oh, wow. I do have to say this, like, in the Black community, there are some rivalries where it's like, you can tell this church is like Cowboys or Washington football team. I can't say the R word. Yeah. Or like Duke UNC. So I was like, I wonder if they kind of throw jabs at him.
I always joke that my parents brainwashed me. Growing up, I would only get Carolina blue winter coats. And that's like all I would wear. And all of my shoes would have some type of Carolina blue. That was my favorite color growing up. So to be here today representing the university is a dream come true.
So I want to ask you about like your national team career and everything like that. And what I saw was like you've played pretty much for the women's national team from like the U14s to the U23s. Can you just, first of all, like, how do you get recognized to be part of a U23 and under squad? And then also, like, what is that experience is like for you?
Yeah. So I got called into my first national team camp when I was 12. I got called in to go to the under 14 girls camp. So that was the 99 age group. I'm a 2000, but I hadn't turned 13 at the time. And you get scouted through a club competition. So at the time I was playing ECNL, which stands for Elite. So you can get scouted through local clubs. I played Elite Clubs National League, ECNL, which was the top tier league at the time. And All the girls that had represented the national team played in that league and would go to national events where we would play all the best teams in a tournament to try and win a national championship at the youth level. But anyways, at those showcases, college coaches and national team scouts would be on our sidelines, checking out all the best players and checking out all the best teams to really find their pool of talent. And I was playing the number one team in the country at that time. And we ended up losing like 5-0, but I like hate losing, and like I'm never gonna give up until the final whistle blows. So I kept fighting and kept trying to make a difference, even though we were losing. And I guess they saw something in me, and they gave me an opportunity to go to the camp that was the following month. So my first camp was in Portland, Oregon, in May of 2013. So I've been at it for a long time. And then since then, I moved up to the 15s, 16s, and went to camps like before the 17 cycle started. The U17 roster is where they have the youngest like Youth World Cup. So I stuck with the 99 age group, and I was able to participate in the U17 Women's World Cup in Jordan. So that was such an amazing experience because we got to go to the Middle East, and a lot of my best friends are on that team, and I got to really feel what it means to be a part of the national team. And then following that, I had some time with the 20s. That was like 5 years up, but I got so much experience, and U.S. Soccer really pushed me, which I'm really grateful for because it accelerated my development. And I was actually supposed to have two 20 cycles, so I ended up making the under 20 Women's World Cup team for 2018. That was in France. And this past year, I went to qualifiers with my own true age group for the first time, which was kind of cool. And we had our qualifiers in Dominican Republic. So our World Cup ended up getting canceled. It was supposed to happen this past January, but it got canceled due to COVID, which was really upsetting. But, you know, that's life. And you just keep moving on to the next level. So all throughout high school, I would go to camps like with whatever age group that they had. And they pushed me all the way up to the 23s camp, and I did really well. And I actually got called into the senior team camp in 2017. So at the time I was 16, and I was the youngest player in the modern era to make the She Believes Cup roster. And that was such a cool experience because I got to play with some of my idols and see what it means to be at the pinnacle of women's soccer, because I believe our senior women's national team is the best team in the world, and they set a standard every single day that gave me a glimpse of what it's like to be there. So I'm working my butt off to get back there, and I want to represent the senior team as soon as I can.
No, I mean, look, I gotta say, you already like answered one of my questions, because I was gonna ask you about like that She Believes Cup and like, what did it mean to you to like get that call up? I'm imagining it had to be like the greatest day of your young professional career.
Yeah, I was in California, Carson, California, and after the 23s camp, the 23s camp was the week before the senior team camp, and my dad actually flew out to California because we were going to go to the high school All-American event. It was like a convention with like the All-American event, so I was going to be recognized for that with another couple of my friends from the youth teams. And at the end of the game or inter-squad match, at the end of the camp, they pulled me aside and they're like, hey, we're going to hold you over and you're going to get to go train with the senior women's national team. And I was just like, oh, like, really? Really? And, I just was kind of shocked because I was so young. Like, I was 16, which is crazy in retrospect, like how long ago that was. But I walked off the field and I was like, dad, like I'm gonna get to train with the women's national team. And he was just so proud of me, and he got to, you know, like go receive my All-American award on my behalf, and you know, like watch training when it was open. The senior team is a little bit more closed off, but he stuck around for the days that he was in town, and it was just such a great experience because like Carly Lloyd, Alex Morgan, Crystal Dunn, they were all there. Those are players that I looked up to, and to see them in their element was just so surreal. One a funny story is that our media guy, Aaron Heifetz, he's known me for years because he's worked with me for the under 17 World Cup. And he knew that Alex Morgan gave me her cleats when I was like 14. So like at that time, it wasn't too much earlier than,
do you still have these cleats?
Yeah, I still have them. They're in my room at home.
Oh, okay.
But I like had posted them on Instagram, and I think it was like, she gave me the cleats. I think they were playing Switzerland in Cary, North Carolina at MC Courage's home field. And it was like the night before I left for like a U14 camp or something. So I was just so stoked. And I posted it on my Instagram and I was like, shout out to Alex Morgan for giving me her cleats. And like I had forgotten about it at the time, but it was like still on my Instagram. And Aaron Heifetz was like, you have to tell Alex that she gave you her cleats. And I was like, no, like, that's so embarrassing. Like, we're at the same camp and you're going to make me tell her that she gave me her cleats not even 2 years ago. That's weird. And so anyways, he like forced me into it. And I was just like, Alex, like, Aaron wanted me to tell you that you gave me your cleats. And she was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, which ones were they? And I was like, the salmon colored hypervenoms. And she was like, I don't remember that. And I was like, okay. And she was just like, well, you're welcome. And I was like, thank you. It was the weirdest exchange ever, but I mean, it was funny. It was kind of my welcome to the team moment, but that was such a great experience. And then to see the international games and watch them play against the best teams in the world was so cool as well.
Did you play in the She Believes Cup at all?
I didn't play. So I'm still trying to work to get my first cap, but I roomed with Julie Ertz. She was Julie Johnson at the time. But it was so interesting because she was like planning her wedding and I was worried about like high school assignments. So we were just in two different spaces of life. and she was probably like, what am I supposed to do with a 16-year-old? But it was funny.
that is hilarious. So going back a little bit earlier before that, you only played 1 year of high school soccer. And for me, like, I just became a high school soccer coach, a girls' high school soccer coach. So, like, I imagine you probably had to be the best player on the field. Why only 1 year of high school soccer? What made you kind of just be like, all right, I want to, you know, kind of go into the upper tier direction of my career?
No, I would have loved to play high school soccer more than 1 year. It's just our club rules. You can't play both because our season was 10 months out of the year. So I was playing ECNL. And since they moved to the 10-month season, like, I had training, and it would just it would conflict with our high school season. So, in my freshman year, the year that I got to play, I scored 24 goals and got 8 assists, and I actually won Gatorade Player of the Year. So, this water bottle's kind of faded now. This is what I won, and it says national, like, Gatorade Player of the Year. So,
okay,
that was kind of cool. But I had a great experience, but I wish I could have done it a couple more years.
No, I'm not going to lie. When I saw the stats and you scored like 24 goals and whatnot, my jaw dropped. I was like, are we sure we can't, you know, put her up a striker already? Like, I'm not going to lie. That is very impressive. That is super impressive. So to UNC, I know your parents went to UNC. When I know UNC is having your family, but outside of your parents going there, what were your reasons of going to UNC?
Yeah, I wanted to get the best of both worlds, both academically and athletically. I felt like at Carolina I could pursue a rigorous academic schedule, so I applied to Kenan Flagler Business School, and I got in, and it's been everything I could have imagined. Like, I love my community there, and I hope to take what I learned in my degree at Carolina to FIFA one day. And then in terms of soccer, I get to play for the best program in the history of women's soccer. And one of the greatest dynasties in all of sport. So to play for Anson Dorrance every day and learn from him and maximize my potential in such a world-class environment, that like, I couldn't turn that down. And then on top of that, I get to be close to home. Like, my parents only live 5 miles from campus. And I actually went home this morning to just check in with them and say hello. But it is so nice because they can come to all of my games. Anson's selling point was, you can roll out of bed and you can come cheer your daughter on at our games in the most beautiful stadium in the country. So they've definitely taken advantage of that. And, just to have our stadium and wear the Carolina blue and to consistently win like that is just so, so special. So the last thing on our plate is we're chasing a national championship, and we're hoping to win that this spring.
Yeah, I got to say, that's probably a great selling point, saying like, hey, you can go out of bed, win a couple of games at a title, and go back home. Like, that's an amazing selling point. Well, I don't think anyone else in the nation is beating that.
They could cheer me on. They could just come down the street and come to our games and watch. But for me, I live on campus.
So. Okay, so you're not at home directly still having a day. No. You're kind of separated a little bit. All right. Yeah. Nah, I feel you. I kind of had this experience here. I was told my mom, I was like, Mom, I can't stay at home. I got to go to college.
Listen, to anybody who's listening to this, go to school where you're close to home if you have a great relationship with their parents, because one of the best things ever is, like, I can get groceries from them or food, or they can take my car to get an oil change. Like, things like that, like, that people don't think about. It's so nice. Or they'll fill up my tank. Like, I love stuff like that. So, or they'll get me dinner. I like, those are things you can't beat.
Oh yeah, you can't beat that. No, so like your freshman year, you played like almost 2,000 minutes in 26 games, and you were first team all ACC and all tournament team. Like, just talk to us a little bit how that freshman year was. You know, putting on that Carolina blue jersey for the first time and going into, like you said, like the greatest women's collegiate soccer team of all time. You know, how was that for you?
I'd say like my first collegiate goal was a testament to like everything I've ever dreamed of. We were playing on our practice field because our stadium was being built at the time, but I got a free kick and I bent it back post like I had practiced, and it was a beautiful goal, and it actually happened to be on Anson's 1,000th win. So that was just so cool to see like all of my dreams come to fruition, and then also to be part of such a special moment in Anson's career. It's something I'll never forget, and it's the first time I got to suit up and wear the Carolina emblem across my chest. So it's always a privilege to be here, and I get to be alongside so many committed individuals who want to maximize their potential and get to that next level. And I think that's what sets our program apart. We empower our women to strive for greatness every day, and I'm learning so much from my teammates, and I'm being pushed, and I love that competition is welcome in this environment. So to go into my freshman season and be immediately embraced by like our upperclassmen and given a chance to have success and just to play free, that was so special, because I know a lot of other girls don't get that. And one of the things we built our program on is like having core values and just, you know, treating everybody with respect. So I think there's like this stereotype that when you go into a college team, like the freshmen are treated differently than your seniors. And it's not like that here. Like if you can play, you can play. And even if you don't play, your opinion is valued and your presence is valued because you add something to this environment that makes it special. And that's how we get results, because every single member of our team is invested in our collective success.
That's amazing to hear. That's great to hear. So going into your sophomore year, you probably turned up a little bit more than what a lot of people were expecting. You were all ACC again, and also you were the Herman Trophy semifinalist. But your junior year, you know, this past year, all ACC again, and also you got selected third by the Sky Blue FC. How was that to be drafted? Like,
yeah, I decided that the next step for me after this season is to go professional. Personally, during like a COVID year, like I want to have the continuity of games, and it's just like kind of hard to take a pause after in a regular year, a spring season sort of, and then you're off from May to July or May to August even. And that's a long time to not be playing games. So I just wanted one more shot to win a national championship. And I think we have all the pieces to do that. Each year, both my freshman and sophomore year, we've gotten there. We're just missing the last piece. So I think we're going to get it done. Everybody's committed. Everybody's fit. And we're feeling good about where we are. And we're motivated more than anything. So to be selected third was just so, so amazing. My dad's from the tri-state area. He's from New York. So to be in the New York, New Jersey area is cool. And one of the most special parts about it is like, I get to be on a team with so many other Black girls. And like, I know that sounds like small in the midst of such a big transition, but like, I've never, ever been in a situation like that. So I feel like Sky Blue is really moving in such a positive direction because they're embracing the social justice side of things while also creating a great brand of soccer where the team is diverse and they just are playing together and they're showing like how special a group can be when you have so many different people from different walks of life. So I'm excited about that. One of our songs is Carolina Blue to Sky Blue. So, but right now I'm focused on my Carolina season. I want to make the most of my last semester in college. And when the time comes to move on to the NWSL, I'll go with everything that I can and invest all of my being into it and try to make the best rookie season. So I'm excited for all the opportunities ahead.
No, we can look forward to seeing everything you do. And once again, like, I don't know if you read the questions that I wrote down, but I was going to ask you, like, have you played in a team where it's majority Black girls? And of course you say you haven't, but what does it mean to you to be able to go to a team that has so like many people of color on the team on it?
Yeah. Like, I think even this draft was unprecedented. I think we had 6 of the top 10 draft picks in the 2021 NWSL draft were people of color, and that's so special. It's a testament to how much this game is growing and how many different types of women are playing soccer and ultimately having success. And we want to keep moving in that direction so that we can create structures for any girl, no matter who you are, where your background is from, to have success in this sport. So to go to Sky Blue with a team that's stacked with so many influential Black women is so special because I'll be able to relate with them in ways than just being like a soccer player. I think like our common humanity is important, and that's a good way to connect off the field, especially as I enter the real world. They can give me advice, and that's what I'm looking for. So to Midge and EP and Amani, like they're, and Mandy, like I could go on and on. They're just such great people. And I met them through national team camps, usually when I was with the 23s, because they're a couple years older than I am. But I can't wait to be teammates with them. And it's just so cool to finally be in an environment where I've just got people who look like me and share the same passions as me. And I don't know, like, it's just so cool to have people you can relate with at the end of the day.
No, I mean, I can tell the excitement in your voice, like, to be able to be in a space where you can look across the room and there's someone else that looks like you, you know, you don't have like that awkwardness anymore. It's like, you're not second guessing like every little thing you're doing. So to be able to have that freedom, it's amazing. You know, you should be excited about it. Yeah. You know, being a college student now, have you had a lot of people come to you and kind of like be like, oh yeah, you're a big shot now, you know, you're a professional now. Like, how has it been on campus for you?
Well, I'd say that's been more over Instagram. Unfortunately, we're in a bubble. We're not really allowed to see other people because we need to stay safe from COVID. So I haven't really seen like all of my friends from other sports teams or even like my classmates in almost a year now because we've been in school like via Zoom. But no, everybody's been super supportive and they're proud of me and they're going to support me and my team this spring. And I just want to make the most of the last moments that I have at college. Obviously, I'm not done with my degree yet. I'll keep taking classes via Zoom even when I'm gone, but just leaving the on-campus experience is going to be tough because there's so many different people that I care about and want to see succeed in their own individual journeys. So I would definitely will miss like being in class with people on different sports teams and like the parties and just like the events like on campus, like that was so, so special before COVID. And honestly, my heart breaks for our freshmen who haven't gotten that experience yet because like you have so many expectations when you go into college, and I'm sure it was hard to immediately enter when we're in the midst of a pandemic and ultimately for our team in a bubble.
Like that freshman year of college is probably the it's the best year ever, man.
Yeah. It's the best year. But I lived it. So like I got the experiences that I needed. I met all, like so many different people, and I'm really grateful for all of that. And even when I was in high school, I was close with the girls on the team, and they would invite me up to campus. So I got to have fun and to like meet people even before I was technically in college. And that was really, really special too, because I have a network of people who are both older and younger than me that I'll be able to connect with once I'm out of college.
Okay. So kind of transitioning back to your whole national team career and whatnot real quick. So you served as U.S. Soccer's youth representative in Moscow, Russia, 2026 FIFA World Cup bid. How was that whole experience? Like, I gotta know, how was that whole experience?
Yeah, I actually think that was the most special experience of my life. Like, I have a lot of great experiences that I'm proud of, but like to bring home a World Cup and be a part of that process was so amazing, and especially a men's World Cup. And given the political climate at the time, I was kind of making a statement because I was a Black woman going up on the stage representing a men's World Cup. And I got to be a part of that with two worldwide stars now. So Alphonso Davies of Canada, who's now with Bayern Munich, and Diego Lainez of Mexico, who's with Betis in Spain. So they both have had great success on the international and the pro level, and I hope to follow them as well. That's something I'll never forget. There were so many different worldwide stars there. To Seedorf and Roberto Carlos, like we got pictures with them, and it was just so special. And then we got to go to the opening match, which was Saudi Arabia versus Russia, and Putin like came in the stadium at like halftime. And one of the most strange events was like all of our phones shut off when he started speaking. So that was it's something I'll never forget. It was just very different. And then what else? One of the promises was Décio Di Maria, the president of Mexico's federation, promised me that we could go to Mexico's training session ahead of their match versus Germany in the opening round, so group play of the World Cup. And since we won the bid, we got to go, and I got to meet Chicharito and like all their other players, and that was just so cool because we saw all the hard work that went into them beating Germany, who is obviously such a great team. So that was such a great experience. We were there for 5 days, and I will look back on that and be proud of it forever. So, but the next thing on my radar, especially being part of the Athlete Council, is I want to push for U.S. soccer and even Canada and Mexico to secure the 27 Women's World Cup rights, because I want to be a part of that too, and I want to play in front of our home fans and get to have that own experience too. So that I loved it.
Was there any player that had you like starstruck that you were just like you just couldn't speak in front of?
No, like I would say like at the FIFA event it's mostly like retired players or like governance folks, so people who are in charge of FIFA. But I didn't really get a chance to like go to all the games. We were only there for just the opening match, and then we went home the next day. But again, it was such a cool experience.
Nah, I imagine that is. You know, I can only imagine how dope that is to not only bring home like a FIFA World Cup, but then also be like, get to see this national team train and whatnot. Like, that's pretty dope. That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
So also, you did an interview with Ms. Crystal Dunn, who we've done a profile on our podcast about. How was that whole, you know, interview process with her? Like, how did that come about?
So I've known Crystal for quite a while. Like I watched her when she was at Carolina, and we developed a relationship where like I would go say hello like after the games, and she's kind of somebody I've like looked up to. Because she's kind of taken on the role of being the Black woman on the national team. And I know there's not many of us, and she's kind of paving the way. So they approached after this summer, like after George Floyd's murder and things like that, they wanted to be more intentional about their approach to diversity, equity, inclusion. And we got to speak on what it means to be a Black woman in the U.S. Soccer Federation. And I was totally open to it because I always like opportunities like that. I want to speak my mind and share my experiences with the world. So to be able to have that conversation with her and like kind of moderate the conversation was great. And she just shared so many different pieces of information that will be useful for me in the future. And then also kind of raised awareness of different issues that Black women and possibly Black men face within the Federation and in soccer as a whole. So in the recent news, she's talked about how Black people are labeled only fast or strong, but rarely technical, like their white counterparts are. And if you look at the stats in the NWSL, Crystal Dunn has contributed so many goals with Carolina Courage and eventually with Portland Thorns this season. And she is a difference maker. And she's kind of been not relegated, but she's been forced to play outside back because she's like the only one who can do it. But it's a testament to her versatility. And she's been pushing to play midfield because, again, she has talents that nobody else has. But I feel like she has to climb a few extra hurdles to get that opportunity. And that's something we wanted to really talk about. So she said to me, which was really special, she loves how like I get to play midfield. And that's kind of my persona, being on the ball and being kind of savvy in the way that I see the field. And she was very encouraging of that because it's something that she's kind of combating right now. So hearing that from her firsthand, it makes me aware of, as I continue to climb the ranks, staying true to who I am and not necessarily changing my game, because I always want my game to evolve, but being confident in my technical ability and using it to the best of my ability, because ultimately, that's what makes me special. And I want to make sure that I show that at every level that I'm at.
And that's one question I do want to ask you. Like, do you have the fear that when you do make it up to the women's national team, like, they're going to tell you, like, you know, even though you're great in midfield, we're going to put you in side back? Or is it something like you're already mentally preparing yourself for?
No, I don't. I wouldn't say I have that fear. I think I know what skill sets I bring to the table, and I'm gonna always fight to do them better than other people that I'm competing with. And I want to be a difference maker from the midfield. I want to consistently create goals and score them myself. So I'm fighting for the 8, 10, or a false 9 position. That's where I want to play, and I'm gonna do everything that I can to make it happen. So, and I think at the end of the day, when you're at the pro level, they can't deny goals, or they can't deny contributions that like can be seen on paper. So as soon as I, like, even this season, this college season, I'm going to do everything I can to create goals and assist and be a game changer. And then same thing in the end of the cell. I want to make results happen. So that way they can't refuse to play me. You know what I mean? I want to be so good that I'm so hard to miss. And obviously I have a lot of development to get there, but that's where my commitment is. And because Crystal has been so open about like her struggles with it, I think she's creating space for other people to have success in the future. And I think that's so important. So in that fight, I want to join her and make it so that other players, other Black women players that are coming up the ranks, that they have a more direct path to where they want to go. If that makes sense.
Oh, that makes 100% sense. Also, I'm just going to write down in my notes that Brianna Pinto said that she will be the 2023 Ballon d'Or winner. So I'm going to take a early stock on that, you know.
that'd be great. That's one of my goals of mine. Whether that happens in 2023 or later on, great. But I want to work to make that happen. Also, one of my goals is to represent the women's national team and win an Olympics and a World Cup. So I have big dreams, but the way my career has gone so far, anything you set your mind to can be achieved. And again, I'm living the dreams that I had as a little kid, and it's been a testament to how hard I've worked and how blessed I've been to be healthy and happy along the way, and also how blessed I've been to have the support system and the coaches that have helped me develop over time. So again, I'm going to dream as big as I can and shoot for the stars, because I know that with the resources and the skill set that I have, that I can achieve great things.
Oh yeah, understandable. So just a couple of more questions. I hope I'm not taking too much of your time.
Totally fine. All good.
Okay. Okay. So being a black athlete, I mean, definitely, like, I'm pretty sure you've seen it on Twitter, like, black supporter culture in America has definitely started to blossom, with, like, the Feathers on Flamingos, us here at Richmond River City 93, you know, other supporter groups. But being a black athlete, what does it mean to you when you see athletes on the soccer pitch take the knee, or, like, you know, be more outspoken with their voice when it comes to political justice and things of that nature?
Yeah, I've even taken the knee before our games at Carolina, and I want people to recognize black athletes for full humanity, because when the jersey comes off, we're people at the end of the day. And I think a lot of people forget that, like, hearing in the media the fact that people tell LeBron to shut up and dribble isn't okay, because his teammates aren't held to the same standard, the ones that aren't black. So why should he be held to that standard? And I think, like, as you climb the ranks and build more of a platform, you kind of have a responsibility to advocate for those who don't have a voice. And one of my goals is to always be open about where I stand with social justice, and to fight for marginalized communities, and to take places of governance that can make real change. So that's kind of why I joined the Athlete Council, and why I wanted to have an influence that would create a more equitable federation for all athletes in our country. And I think that's important. And the more that we're willing to speak up, the more that people will hear it, consider what we have to say, and possibly even change their views. So I always encourage black athletes to use their platform to the fullest extent, and to never be afraid to use their voice, because it is a resource. And when you're relevant, you only have one chance, so make the most of it.
So one last question before we wrap up the podcast. Your brother Hassan Penta, I do have to ask this as a Richmond Cavaliers fan. How was it for your family and also him when he signed his first professional contract? Like, how was that moment for your family?
Yeah, he's the first one in our family to sign a professional contract, like you said. So I think, again, that's a testament to how hard our parents have pushed us, the values they've instilled in us. And then all the summers and winters where me, Malik, and Haas would leave everything we had on the field to get fitter, to get sharper in our passing, to be more elite in finishing. And for him to achieve one of his lifelong dreams of playing professionally was truly special. And I think it was a success for all of us. And we want him to continue to push the bar and set the standard for both Malik and I, because we want to achieve the most collective success as we can, and we want to support each other along the way. So for my younger brother Malik, who's a freshman at Princeton, he has dreams of playing the MLS one day, and I think he can do it because he's had both me and Haas to look up to. And Haas has shown him how to work for what he wants. And Haas's path has not been straight. He's had to work through a lot of adversity. And I think all three of us are better because of it. But Malik and I were able to witness how he dealt with it and what he changed, and how he didn't let that deflate his spirit or change his goals or just become less confident. And I think that growth that Haas had ultimately shows that no matter how hard, like if you're willing to work for something, it will come true. But you have to be willing to sacrifice within that. So, again, him signing a professional contract was just the beginning. I'm excited to see what's next in his career, and I hope that he continues to push because it sets the bar even higher for Malik and I.
Well, nah, that's awesome to hear, man. Well, definitely over here, Can I Kick It? 93. We will be rooting for you up in Sky Blue and also the UNC season. Ms. Pinto, I just want to say thank you once again for taking the time out of your day to come into our podcast. I know you're busy with a thousand other things, but I just want to say thank you.
No, thank you for having me. It's truly special to speak with you today.